I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. Readers who love the courageous and honorable Atticus Finch portrayed in To Kill a Mockingbird have been shocked, even horrified, by the racist Atticus Finch that Harper Lee depicts in her just-published novel Go Tell a Watchman. Fans of Cliff Huxtable, the character that Bill Cosby played in his hit TV show, are struggling to reconcile this fictional all-American dad and family man with allegations of sexual abuse leveled against Cosby. Cycling fans have had to deal with Lance Armstrong's cheating on the Tour de France, as have other sports fans and the athletes that they have looked up to. All of us have had heroes, whether we like to admit it or not, and whether they are public figures or members of our own family. Today in Radio Times, we explore what happens when our heroes fail us, how to manage the disappointment that comes along with it, and we have a trio of guests who have joined us. Jane Schur is with us here in our Philadelphia studio, psychotherapist and leadership coach with the Pennsylvania-based Resilience Group. And Jane, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty.
And joining us by telephone is Frieda Gittes, World Affairs columnist, a contributor to CNN World Politics Review and the Miami Herald. Frieda Gittes, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And also with us is Sam Fullwood, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, where he analyzes the influence of national politics and domestic policies on communities of color across the U.S. And Sam Fullwood, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, we love talking about heroes and, I guess, fallen heroes as well. Jane, do you have any fallen heroes?
None come to mind for me so much, but I have watched my husband go through the heartbreak of Lance Armstrong. He's a cyclist, and that wasn't pleasant to watch, and I think that he held on for a really, really long time.
Until the facts just were in his face and he had to see him for who he was?
Exactly.
How about for you, Sam?
Yes, absolutely. Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. And have you believed until recently?
No. I had my faith shaken when I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, and quite frankly, I have never ever gotten over it. And it sort of shaped my whole notion about heroes.
Oh, interesting. And I'll go back to that to you, Frieda. Any fallen heroes for you?
Marty, I have been a journalist for a long, long time, and I have had the opportunity to admire people over the years and then discover aspects of their life that were less than impressive. So, yes, I've had many, many experiences of being disappointed by people that I had initially admired more than they deserved, perhaps.
Well, in fact, you wrote about your admiration for Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and then finding out more about her that, I guess, what, took her off her pedestal a little bit?
Well, you know, I should say that I still admire her enormously. I think she's an incredible woman, and she has done things that are so deserving of all of our admiration. But the experience I had was that I was on a trip a few months ago in the Middle East, and I unexpectedly had the opportunity to meet her, and I tweeted a picture of me with her. I was so happy to have that opportunity, and I used a word that I very, very seldom use. I wrote in my tweet, something like, "Here I am with my hero, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf." Mm. And immediately I had a tweet back from someone saying, "You should look at her record on gay rights. She's been terrible on gay rights." And I hadn't really looked at all aspects of her time in as a politician. And, you know, politicians very often have to make very, very difficult decisions that make them at times compromise their principles. And it turned out that she has not been great on gay rights. Mm. So I wished I could have rephrased my tweet and say, "Here I am with Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, a woman I admire enormously." And, you know, maybe not use the word hero.
Not use the word hero. Picking up on that, Jane, why do we want heroes? Why do we feel like we need heroes?
Well, I think we're trained to have heroes from when we're really young, and we're introduced with television and with books and story characters, and they make us feel good. So we want to hold on to the feeling good and the getting excited, and we don't want to believe that people are really capable of doing the many bad things that people are capable of doing.
Well, as a psychotherapist, you must know how people really are. I mean, what you get to hear, what maybe they don't tell us.
Absolutely. And part of the explosion right now of the public sector and the media being able to expose real people doing exploitative things is that everybody in our communities, in our family lives, extended family lives. There are lots of those people that are hidden and still living secretive lives.
As Frida talked about, the tweets that can really undo somebody. Sam, let me go back to you, and I don't know if we should go back to Santa Claus and, and when you discovered that there was no Santa Claus, but obviously this was an important revelation for you. Are you disappointed in Santa Claus or disappointed in the people that told you that he did exist?
The answer is yes to both. I mean, I think that was the first time that I realized that my parents were fallible. It wasn't so much hero worship. They were my parents.
Right.
But the idea that they sort of participated in this charade that ultimately turned out not to be true. And because I wanted to believe that there was somebody out there who would give me gifts for no reason at all. And so coming to grips with the reality of all of that sort of made me, recognize that, you know, the whole idea of hero worship is a flawed construct. I later went into journalism, and like Frida, I had an opportunity as a journalist to see people who were idolized by millions of folks up close and personal. But I never ever allowed myself to be swayed by the public perception, especially whenever I found out something about them in private.
Well, Frida, you know, one wonders today whether anyone puts a politician on a pedestal. I remember when Barack Obama was elected president, and oftentimes first-time voters or young voters were excited to think that this man could change this country, a harsh lesson. But do you think there is a place for politicians, maybe not as heroes, but people to be admired?
You know, I think the word that Sam used is exactly the right one, fallible. We're talking about human beings here, and they are fallible, and they will disappoint us, especially if our expectations are completely out of proportion to that fact, to the fact that they are human and that they will disappoint us. I think we need to be adult about this. You know, we need to know that people are going to make decisions and that they have strengths and weaknesses, and we will have to weigh the strengths against the weaknesses and decide if they are worthy, on balance, if they are worthy of our admiration. And it's a tough thing, you know. We all want the heroes. You know, we want somebody who's going to save the world, maybe fly in with a cape and make it all okay, but it's not that simple, you know. And in fact, maybe we need to remember now that the original heroes, you know, the heroes of Greek mythology, they also were flawed. So it's a challenge for us as human beings to understand that nobody is perfect and that they will do things that we will not like.
What's interesting, Jane, Sam was talking about his disappointment about Santa Claus, but also you think about Cliff Huxtable, you know, the character that Bill Cosby played on television, very popular program. Also, Atticus Finch, we did a show about that, and I got emails from people saying, you know, I'm not going to read this book. I don't want to know about an Atticus Finch that's not this honorable man that seemed so wonderful.
We want to believe in the people who hold positions in our lives. So whether they're politicians, whether they're our parents or our grandparents, whether they're the head of a company, we want to believe that they have our best interests at heart. Because as human beings, that's actually how we end up feeling secure and be able to guard against threat and danger. So we make up these stories, and and we're more likely to give somebody a get-out-of-jail pass for free than we are to be skeptical and hold them in question.
But what is it about fictional characters? I mean, I can understand, you know, a parent or a mentor or something like that, but what is it about a character that we so identify with and want to believe about?
Again, I think it helps us to get a feeling, and we're not drawn to the characters that cause us to feel bad,
right,
or afraid. We're drawn to the characters that make us laugh, that make us feel good, that we look forward to seeing again, that when we think about them, when we see a picture of them, they give us that surge of excitement.
Sam, you wrote about both Bill Cosby and also Atticus Finch. How do you understand how people are viewing them? Two very different cases here, but what are your thoughts?
I was enormously struck by, it was the timing with Atticus Finch and Bill Cosby being in the news at the same time, and the the outpouring of grief that I was hearing people express, one person a real person, the other a fiction one. Atticus Finch in particular was fascinating to me because for at least two, maybe almost three generations now, he was the model sort of against a lot of our stereotypes about the South and white men in the South. And this was a virtuous person. There was nothing flawed about Atticus Finch in Go Tell a Mockingbird. Everything he did was perfect. And then to have it revealed by the author of the original book, right, to say that there was something enormously disturbing about him, I think people sort of felt like what they believed in, it wasn't just identifying with the character, but sort of their whole way of looking at the world was rocked by that. And I think in a very similar way, Cosby in his real life persona was, in many people's mind, the television persona that they had grown up or they had come to love and admire in his presentation of Cliff Huxtable. And to have that image taken away, I've heard people say, well, I don't like Cosby. I don't like Bill Cosby anymore, but I still love Cliff Huxtable because they can make a distinction between the two. And that's sort of this need to resolve the cognitive dissonance in our mind between what we believe, what we want to believe, and what the world sometimes tells us is a little bit more empirically observable.
And Jane, since you're the psychotherapist here, is that denial? I mean, are we dealing with denial in certain kinds of ways?
It's compartmentalization, denial being part of it. So we get to have our denial, and that protects us from having to deal with reality, which has a whole bunch of unpleasant feelings and outrage and shock, right? As people read some of what is being alleged about Bill Cosby, it's shocking. It's disgusting. It's horrifying. And when, that goes on in life, and it goes on a lot in real people's lives, a lot of people around
things.
Them, that people do horrible things, that people exploit others and they force themselves on their bodies, and there's lots of people drugging and raping women all over. There's lots of molestation going on in families and in communities. And we don't want to deal with the knowing of it because it horrifies us.
Yeah. Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about heroes, fallen heroes, how to deal with a disappointment when finding out that someone that you admired isn't who they are, whether fictional or non-fictional. And again, Jane Scherer is a psychotherapist, leadership coach with the Resilience Group based here in Pennsylvania. Frieda Gittes is a world affairs columnist, a contributor to CNN World Politics Review and the Miami Herald. And Sam Fullwood, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. We'll take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know if you have struggled with a fallen hero. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. Just a recap here, we're talking about the fact that all of us have had heroes, people we have admired, people we've looked up to, whether we want to admit it or not. They could be members of our families, they could be mentors, they could be artists, celebrities, athletes, politicians. We're exploring what happens when our heroes fail us, how to manage that disappointment. And again, with Jane Scherer, with Frieda Gittes, and Sam Fullwood. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Frieda, you wrote something recently. You said, if you want to admire someone fully, you should not look too closely. If you want to admire them smartly, you should brace yourself for at least some measure of disappointment. Is this something you have come to as you have lived your life and perhaps had some of these disappointments?
I think I have. And, I think with all these heroes that have been falling lately, I think there is a risk that we're going to become a little bit too cynical. And I would hate to be a part of promoting that cynicism. I think we've talked about why people want heroes, why we are attracted to them. But there's a really important role that heroes play in our lives. They inspire us. They give us moral courage. They make us want to emulate them. And I hope that will never go away. You know, I keep thinking about one of the people who was a great hero of mine, who is, once again, somebody that I admire enormously, and that is Aung San Suu Kyi, Burmese leader who endured decades of house arrest to help bring democracy, to end a brutal dictatorship in her country. And I had the opportunity to go to Burma while she was under house arrest, and I talked to people there, and the country was enduring really, really harsh international sanctions that were making life so difficult for the people there. And I talked to them, and what they told me, you know, under their breath, so that the military could not hear them, is they wanted those sanctions to continue. They kept mentioning her name, the lady. They didn't say her name. They called her the lady. She inspired them. They knew that she was sacrificing her own life. She had the opportunity to leave the country and have a normal life if she gave up the struggle, and she refused to do that, stayed in Burma, and endured horrific deprivations in order to continue with the struggle. And that strength strengthened the people around her and inspired people around the world. She is a flawed woman. More recently, she has been a disappointment. She has not spoken out when there have been attacks against the Burmese Muslims, the Rohingya. She has not spoken out, and that's been a tremendous disappointment. But that cannot completely outweigh the enormous sacrifices she made, and sacrifices that produce results.
Well, Sam, just picking up on that, and that's talking about another country's political system, but I wonder also, in this political system where you have to make compromises, you often have to, you know, do things you may not believe in, is it important just to be more clear-eyed about who we elect to Congress and have a more realistic view of what they can and cannot do?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think when we think about heroes, we also should think about what makes a person a hero and what makes someone, you know, less than a hero. And the whole notion of celebrity is that they become a symbol. They stand for something other than what they actually are. And so the symbolic representation of a hero tends to be in our society a commodity. It's something that other people can either sell or market or use to be able to advance a cause or an issue, however they want to do it. And inevitably, what that symbol has to bump up at some point or another, if we live long enough, if the history is accurately told over time, with that person's humanity. And the humanity of an individual, be it a congressperson or a political leader or sports, whomever we put on this pedestal, no one can, in the bright glare of attention and publicity, stand up and have all of their pores exposed and remain as heroic of a symbol as they would have been. We now live in almost a nonstop media, social media world, where if you achieve that symbolic hero status, there's inevitably somebody is going to be able to catch you at a moment when you are not heroic and when you're human.
Well, I wonder, Jane, whether we both put people on a pedestal and then sort of enjoy their fall, you know, in this sort of snarky, gossipy way.
I don't know that we enjoy that fall. I do think that we bond around the conversation. So in some ways it serves us as a community. But I think it's also that these heroes are human beings, and human beings have personalities and they have dark sides, and many people have a dark side that allows them to not experience guilt or remorse or have a sense of really how they're impacting another human being. And when the people who might be really smart, might be really talented, don't have that quality in their brain that provides them with that function, because it's a brain function, we're all at risk, and they're at risk because they can't help themselves but to do some of the things that they do. They don't have enough brake power to stop themselves. They don't have enough fear of the consequences to be able to not do what they're doing.
and we bond as we criticize them, right?
Absolutely.
I want to shift gears just slightly, and I'll go back to you, Jane, again, because you're the psychotherapist here, but thinking about parents. I mean, all children at some point, certainly during their adolescence, they think their parents are a bunch of idiots. And hopefully by adulthood, they can have a much more reasonable and realistic view of their parents. Is it we also put our parents on pedestals or can, and then go through the same kind of process we've been talking about?
Oh, yeah. I think as kids, we need to, and we don't have any other choice if we're going to feel safe and we're going to feel loved than to see our parents as all-powerful and all-knowing, and they're the best, and we're going to look up to them as an authority. And then we might continue to do that blindly, or we might continue to do that because they earn it, or we might continue to do it because we don't feel like we have a choice about it.
That we're dependent on them.
We're dependent on them, or that way in which we have been able to think skeptically gets compromised. Right? That denial that you were talking about earlier, that gets reinforced over and over again, and we don't trust our own perceptions, so we talk ourselves out of having our own perceptions and just rely on whatever somebody else is saying is so.
Sam, I want to go back to you. And as you were talking, I was thinking about President Johnson, and I was a late adolescent young adult, I guess, when he was president. And I remember, because of the Vietnam War and some other things, I just thought he was horrible. I mean, I just remember just hating this guy. And I've read about him more recently, done interviews about him, and he's absolutely fascinating guy, a kind of maybe a reverse hero worship. I'm not, I don't see him as a hero, but it's interesting that this can work in reverse.
I think what happens particularly with historical figures, and sometimes with fiction, but mostly with historical figures, we learn more over time, and that learning can do, obviously, one of two things. It can either burnish that person's reputation and sort of put it into the context, maybe against the time that we weren't able to see. Certainly that was the case with President Johnson. I think it's also the case with President Carter. I think that over time, his image in the American mind has grown from what it was when he was president and left office. He was really a diminished figure. And I think that sort of we tend to look at things differently. By contrast, some people, their image tends to suffer somewhat. And I'm thinking, if you want to sort of keep it in a political context,
sure.
You could look at maybe some of the founding fathers. There's a real revisionist mode going on in the country now to sort of assess their stance on slavery, their stance toward women. Now, we're judging them against different standards. In their day, they were right in the mode of what everybody was doing. But I think that, you know, some of their language and the rhetoric of freedom and liberty flies in the face of their behavior. And I think that when we start looking back at historical figures and then put them into a different context, we can come up with another way of looking at them.
I'm thinking of Thomas Jefferson as you speak. That's Sam Fullwood, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Also with us is journalist Frieda Gittes and psychotherapist Jane Scherr. And we are talking about what happens when our heroes fail us. We got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. No surprise there. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We have a lot of tweets coming in at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Stu from, looks like Cherry Hill, to join us. Hi, Stu. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to talk about the power of fictional heroes and why they matter so much. So in my life, I look at Superman and Captain America. When I was a kid, they were symbols of hope. They didn't kill. They did the right thing. And I grew up in a very abusive home, and I was able to hold those symbols close to my heart and help me through that darkness of my early childhood. And it's one of the reasons why I became a comic book artist myself, why I fight against animal cruelty and for special needs kids. And now when you look at how the latest movie, the Superman, he's such an immoral character who kills tens of thousands of people, destroys buildings. So many people, I think, are angry about it because they see that symbol that they held as hope just be so tarnished. And it just shows how powerful fictional symbols can be, because we as people can use them to lift us out of our own darkness. And it sounds silly sometimes that, you know, it's just a fictional character, he's not real. But
not at all.
When you see the effect it has on you as children, and how good and how positive it can be, you know, I just feel bad for the kids now who don't have a lot of those symbols of true heroes who don't kill.
Well, Stu,
and even if it's not realistic, so that's why it really does matter to people.
Well, you really are making a very powerful point, and I'm looking at Jane Scherer. What do you think about what Stu just said?
I think it's really smart, and you're describing, Stu, how characters help us activate a certain character trait within ourselves that we emulate, and it can be real people or it can be these characters, mm-hmm. just like on a television show. Or on a movie, books, anywhere.
Thanks for the call, Stu. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Frieda, you were talking about some of the women that you had admired that perhaps you have a much more realistic view of that. Do you think there's a gender difference, how we look at heroes, or whether we put them on higher or lower pedestals?
I think we have it with both, with men and women. And I was thinking when I was listening to the last caller, and I was thinking about the genesis of Superman, how he was inspired by that old Jewish mythology figure, the Golem, who was a character that was meant to protect the people who were oppressed and powerless in their environment. I think that is one of the reasons why we are drawn to these very, very powerful figures and are more comfortable not knowing that they have flaws. You know, people look at, you know, throughout history, FDR, you know, he brought the country out of the Depression. He was, you know, helped win World War II. He was such a beloved figure. But in his personal life, he was, you know, not so admirable. Same with John F. Kennedy, and even, you know, Gandhi and Mandela in their family life, they were not perfect. So, you know, I think we have this, we look for a father figure and maybe for a mother figure, and more for Jane maybe to explain to us, but we want that strength and that wisdom to guide us and to protect us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we leave out the part where they are fallible.
You're nodding your head, Jane.
Well, it's true. We want to idealize people because it helps us to aspire to being better than we are, right? That's part of our achieving goal, is to be better than we are in a current place. And they help us to do that, or the way we hold them in our minds helps us to do that.
Makes us feel better, right?
Right, because the real people are real people.
Let me get Dave from, looks like Wilmington, Delaware, to join our conversation. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Thanks
there
for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I bought a Bill Cosby record at the Goodwill this weekend, and I got kind of a disparaging look. Now, I'm a writer and a stand-up comedian myself, and I have been a fan of Bill's since, like, the early days.
Right.
And, you know, as much as I think the allegations have proven that he's kind of a deplorable human, you're not going to tell me that Wonderfulness isn't, like, a great comedy record. And I also kind of wonder if we're having too much of an overcorrect in the sense that, you know, the Dukes of Hazzard had a Confederate flag on the car. I watched that as a kid. I'm not a racist. I watched I Spy, the Bill Cosby Show, the Cosby Show, listened to all his records. I'm not a rapist. I kind of wonder if, like, you know, where is
They've
the point where it's, like, acceptable to kind of shut off from these things? I mean, if you think about it, Roman Polanski, you know, had sex and had to flee the country with a 15-year-old. Does that mean, like, we can't watch Chinatown anymore? The Naked Gun movies had an alleged double murder in them. I mean, are those off the table as well? I mean,
well, Dave, those are all good questions. A very interesting story about Bill Cosby. So to you, Sam, what are your thoughts as Dave describes and wonders or worries that perhaps we're being, what, too politically correct?
I don't worry about that as much as I worry about, as I mentioned earlier, the way in which we hold our celebrities out is really is a marketing effort. What we know about Bill Cosby, for example, is a very cultivated image created by people who wanted to sell his records and his concerts and the Cosby Show. And that when, if we were to sort of deconstruct the whole marketing around our celebrities, we would be left with just a human being like the people that we walk past every day that we don't know. Some people are able to manufacture an image around themselves and sell that to other people and enrich themselves. Demystifying that takes away that hero status, particularly with celebrities in the entertainment and sports world. I mean, almost all of our sports heroes and entertainment heroes are just marketed to the death. We are now seeing some of that happen with our political leaders. You can't run for office without spending an enormous amount of money. Well, that money is used for. It's used for ads to sort of burnish the image of the person, not to burnish the person. That doesn't make the person any better. It makes what we think about that person better. The warm fuzzies we get from watching a campaign ad or a packaged production about that person at a nominating convention. I think we as citizens of the world or citizens of a society really do have to look at ourselves and to be a little bit more cautious about embracing these symbolic representations of real people. And that's really hard. I mean, I think that's really hard for us to do.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Sam Fullwood, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Also with us is journalist Frieda Gittes and psychotherapist Jane Schur. We are talking about our fallen heroes, how we put them on pedestals and then oftentimes are upset about when they fall. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. We got a lot of people calling us at 1-888-477-9499. A bunch of tweets at WHYY Radio Times and email as well, radiotimes@whyy.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Sam Fullwood, Jane Schur, and Frieda Gittes about what happens when our heroes fail us. We've got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. And I should just say, Jane and I were talking during the break, and there was something that you wanted to say on the air in response to what Sam was saying there.
Right. It's a very complex thing to be able to still enjoy watching your movies or listening to your albums that make you laugh, but still hold the reality of who that person is, that they're a very complicated person, that they may be very talented, and they still have this side to them that can take advantage of another person and do whatever they want to do and not be able to feel enough guilt and put brakes on themselves. So we can continue to watch Woody Allen films and still hold the idea that he's a complicated character, not idealize him.
Right. Or Roman Polanski being somebody else as
exactly.
well. But what you were also saying is that this stuff is happening perhaps more and more in real time. You know, sometimes you find out about people in the history books. Now we're finding it out closer to when it's actually happening.
Right. So in terms of, are we doing too much? You know, should we be stopping this? No, we absolutely should not. This is a new wave where we are speaking up more, where people are having more courage to speak about some of the ways in which they've been used and abused and taken advantage of. And the only way we actually really get to believe that people aren't completely trustworthy is by real people's stories and by being able to believe them more. Because otherwise, we don't have enough believability power in our own selves that when we're up against those moments of being scammed by another person, we want to have that detector signal go off and say, scam, wait a minute, don't go forward with this.
Alert. Frieda, anything you want to add to that? And then we'll get back to our callers here.
Yeah, I want to get back to something that Sam said. You know, we need to look at why people are being viewed as heroes. Are they simply celebrities? I mean, because somebody's a celebrity, maybe because they have a good marketing machine, maybe because they are talented actors or talented whatever they do, fine, that let's keep it within that realm. There are other people who are getting this mantle of heroism because of something they have done. I was sitting here during the break thinking about heroes, and the image that came to my mind was the Tiananmen Square tank man who stood in front of a line of tanks with his shopping bags. We don't even know who he was. I mean, that we don't know anything about him. We know he did something heroic that is so worthy of admiration. Maybe we're better off not knowing anymore and just having that image as a source of inspiration.
Well, that's actually fascinating, and I hadn't thought of that man in many, many years, Frieda. Let me read a couple of tweets here. Tweet from Sue: please comment on the post-9/11 mania to call anyone who wears a uniform a hero. A tweet from Janine: I prefer my heroes dead. Most of their humanity has been shown, less likely to disappoint. A tweet from Ruth: love the Catholic veneration of saints, all of whom are obviously flawed and human. Heroic is not perfect. A tweet from ATP: lost respect for Teddy Roosevelt when I learned he lauded crowd that lynched Italian immigrants in New Orleans. A tweet from Danielle: we start identifying as having ability, capacity for greatness. We assign it to our heroes. What is a shift like that? And many more tweets coming in as well. Let me get James from Chester County to join us. James, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I just wanted to make a point. First of all, I just think that we toss around the word hero a little bit too loosely. But that being as it is, I just think that when people are reluctant heroes and you find something out about them that's revealing, you're a little bit more forgiving rather than someone that has set themselves up as a moral authority and or a champion like Lance Armstrong and Bill Cosby, and then have to find out that they're anything but. So I think we're a little bit more forgiving and we don't feel as bad. And almost we feel vindicated or there's been some justice served rather than, you know, we've been deflated by their hero status being, you know, unmasked. It's fun to say that.
And I was going to ask you a question, James. It sounds like we are losing you, but you raise an interesting point about reluctant heroes. Sam, have you thought about that?
A little bit. And I think that goes to what I was saying a minute ago about the marketing aspect of it. A reluctant hero, like the person in Tiananmen Square, we don't know that person's name because there wasn't a machine behind that person to promote them, to make them a celebrity. They did something in a moment, and it was noted, and then it passed, and the moment goes by to be forgotten, only remembered by people who really, really admired something that they did. Those reluctant heroes are rare. I mean, people who, you know, help a little old lady across the street or loan somebody some money in the checkout line at the grocery store. Those are heroic acts if we want to shape them that way. But they don't get celebrated because there's not the effort. There's not the marketing to commodify those kinds of acts. The sort of random acts of kindness that happen all the time, to me, is very heroic because you're not. To me, a hero is someone who does something selflessly. And if you're doing something selflessly, and then you got people going around telling everybody how selfless you were, I think in almost by default that diminishes your heroism.
Jane, you're nodding your head. You have a slight advantage in that you and I are looking at
right,
each other.
Right, right, right.
I can't see the other two guests.
Well, I also think that heroes come up in our day-to-day life. They come up in our lives as kids with our coaches, with our camp counselors, with our teachers. And those people might get to have a certain effect on us, and they may also get to experience power that they then either have to respect and hold the boundary of that power. And the majority of people do that. Or they cross the line and they go over the boundary and abuse that power.
I mean, I think about mentors, you know, the importance of mentors in not just a young person's life, but in a person's life. A mentor can be a kind of a hero.
Well, and if you read the New York Magazine article about Bill Cosby, many of the people who he had access to that he tricked into drugging and having sex with him because they were drugged were people that he was mentoring.
So it's a very powerful relationship there.
Very powerful.
Let me see what Trevor from Reddington has to say. Trevor, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how's it going? Yeah, I got a lot to say. I've been following the whole conversation. I really appreciate you having me. My opinion is really that heroes create an unrealistic expectation of what human capabilities really are. Now, ultimately, it distorts our perception of reality, which, whether it be national or universal, I think this provides like a basis upon which one can make irrational decisions. We see that a lot happening today in society. And, you know, those are based on heroic acts or deeds that one finds plausible or effective at the time. And then, you know, we're talking a lot about how this plays out in sports or entertainment.
Sure.
You guys mentioned Bill Cosby, and Lance Armstrong. My ultimate argument is that these heroes need to be more concrete. They need to be more accessible. I find that, you know, as an avid skateboarder, the people who have, you know, helped raise me in my society are those who helped, you know, create a scene but did it in such a selfless manner that we're talking about selflessness earlier. I was listening to that. And, you know, they did it in such a way that they're not condoned or, you know, they might not even be allowed to do what they do, but we create a skate park, we do something for the community that is ultimately something that everyone can enjoy, but no one really talks about it. It's not really up there. You know, as we're, you know, talking about sports or something like that.
Trevor, I got to jump in here only because you put too many things on the table for us to discuss, but I appreciate your passion on the issue. Frieda, one of the things he said at the very beginning is that having these heroes creates an unrealistic expectation. And I think, you know, until you sort of realize that people are fallible and flawed human beings, it can create an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah, and I think that the risk of that is that we're devaluing the world. People are being labeled heroes so quickly, and then of course we are inevitably disappointed. The word hero is being used into meaninglessness, which is really a pity. You know, I think personally I have not seen a lot of sports figures that I think really qualify for that. Term. You know, if somebody is a very good athlete and is doing very well and getting very well compensated and becoming very famous, that's fine. They're great, great athletes. Let's admire them for their athletic ability. But I don't know how that makes them heroes. Mm. I think we should reserve the word for specific individuals who have special qualities of courage and self-sacrifice and of you know, something really unique that involves giving something of themselves without expecting reward and achieving something that is really meaningful. When you are doing your job and doing it really well and getting very well compensated for it, you know, it's fine. You're helping entertain people. I don't see how that makes you a hero.
I mean, have we devalued the idea of hero, Jane?
Well,
too easy to stamp a label on somebody?
I don't know that we call so many people heroes as much as we admire them and we look up to them and we give them a lot of positive regard, whether they deserve it or not. We give it to them because of how they impress us and how they make us feel.
Can I just jump in here?
Sure.
I'm just wondering here why Bill Cosby was a hero. He was a comedian, an actor. Why was he a hero? Remind me.
Was it because of Dr. Huxtable, do you think?
But that was a character.
I understand that.
Well, here in Philadelphia, he was a hero because he was the person who would hand out diplomas at Temple University every year. So he was not only the character that he was in his TV show, but he was this professorial appearing person who was given a huge amount of respect and admiration in that position. And it was from that position, actually, of being a mentor and positioning himself and coming off as empowering other people that he used that to take advantage of people.
I appreciate that comment. Sam, I'm going to just flip this on its head a little bit. Have you ever been viewed as a, if not a hero, but had people look up to you?
Not that I'm aware of. That would make me very uncomfortable.
Well, that's what I was curious about. Would it? It would?
Yes, it would make me extremely uncomfortable. I mean, I have a daughter, and my daughter and I have a fantastic relationship. I've never heard her describe me as a hero. I've heard her describe me as her father. And I can't think of any relationships that I've had with people where I've done anything that was heroic. Now, I like to think of myself as a really nice person. I think I've done some things to help people, but it wasn't nothing that I would consider heroic.
So you're saying, I mean, if someone were to do that with you, it's really undeserved from your perspective.
I would like to have a conversation with someone who would do that. I really would. I mean, I think that would be a fascinating maybe I could sit down with the psychiatrist and we could figure out what's going on in their lives that they would think that I'm a hero.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we don't know you quite well enough, Sam, to maybe be able to do that. Let me get Susie from New Jersey to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Susie. Go ahead. You're on the air. Whoa. Go ahead, Susie. Sounds like someone's stomach is growling. No, I'm going to read what Susie says here. Sometimes we have to just be more grown up about heroes. We are the heroes, and we need to grow up and be able to forgive and to be able to be heroes to other people. But it sounds like what she's saying, Jane, is that if you grow up, or once you grow up, then you're not going to put people into these categories.
Well, you know, I think that the ability to speak up about something that's really hard to talk about is heroic, because it takes enormous courage. One doesn't know what they're going to get met with. So many people get met with ridicule and humiliation and public shaming. So this way in which we're defining heroic and hero is an interesting thing to think about.
And Frieda, you mentioned Twitter. I mean, and as we all know, Twitter can be really vicious. I mean, it seems that the internet gives people, because of the anonymity, I guess, the ability to perhaps say nasty things that they might not say to someone's face.
It seems like we are entering an era of extremes. People are, you know, for a moment, they are on the pedestal, and then we get some new information, and they are garbage. You know, they are worthless human beings.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's we're entering the political season, the election season, and it's, you know, people, we're all going to be making some very important decisions, some big choices, and we're going to be bombarded with information. We're going to see people that have achieved a lot in their lives, and we're going to be told, on the one hand, that they are infallible, flawless human beings, and we're going to be told about the exact same person that they are not worthy of our admiration at all. And it's a time for us, once again, we used this word before, it's a time for us to be adult about it and weigh the weaknesses and the strengths and try to make a decision without being carried to either extreme, knowing they have achieved things and they have failed in other areas. And that is the crux. You know, we are talking about individuals, about human beings, and we need to look at them with open eyes, look at the reality.
Sam, final tweet to you. This is from M. Yikes, outing Santa Claus during daytime hours without a warning. Quickly cover the kids' ears. Laugh out loud.
That's funny.
That is funny.
I don't subscribe to maintaining that mythology anymore. So
I'm glad to know that. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate all three of you joining us today in Radio Times. Sam, so much. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure, Marty.
And he's Sam Fullwood, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. Frieda Gittes, thank you very much as well.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. And she writes for a number of publications, including as a columnist for World Politics Review. And Jane Scher, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Jane Scher is a psychotherapist here in the Philadelphia area. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook, and how to follow us on Twitter. Claire Moran is the intern this summer for Radio Times. The show's engineer today, Kevin Griffin. Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens produce Radio Times. I'm Marnie Moscoe, and thanks for joining us.